in this episode.
It's absolutely incredible. Karen has entered over 40 short story competitions. But the thing that's fascinating about Karen is her incredible success rate. And today we're going to delve into some of her secrets as to how she does it. The word count you're putting out a month is absolutely bonkers. I've seen numbers like 40,000 words a month. How are you doing that?
I think once I sit down and start writing, when we were talking about going into the flow and, you know, being totally focused, I completely lose track of time. I'd be feeling stressed. I'd go home. I'd say to my husband, I just need a little bit of time on my own. I didn't tell him I was writing. In fact, I started buying writing magazine and hiding them because I was almost embarrassed that he was like, well, what are you doing?
I have to laugh as well, the idea of hiding a writing magazine. It's usually the opposite way around in a relationship.
I don't want to write newsletters. I want to write fiction. But I found a way to write my newsletters. It's my cat, Tiffany, who writes the newsletters. And I embody her, take on her personality because she's a very, very grumpy, snarky cat. My father was an infamous New York cop back in the 1970s. I don't know if you've heard of Frank Serpico. He was the policeman who turned in the corrupt police officers who were taking money from the mafia. My father was also a writer, but he was a writer who didn't show his work to anybody.
Now, with entering competitions out there, and sometimes it's hard to know which ones are the real deal and which ones are kind of not so legit, how do you make decisions over what you enter?
There are a few places that I trust.
If somebody's interested in getting into short story writing and even entering competitions, what top tips that you would share with them?
Okay, number one.
Hello and welcome to the Bestseller Experiment, where we continue to explore the inner game of writing and life and inspire you to start, finish, and publish a best-selling book. I'm Mark DeVoe, and in this episode, we have a very, very special guest who I'll be getting to very shortly. But I would firstly like to thank our patron of the week. And our patron of the week this week is Catherine Hash. Thank you so much, Catherine, for joining our family of patrons and experimates. And also thank you to everyone in the Bestseller Academy as well that makes this podcast possible. And if you'd like to be like Catherine, if you'd like to be a patron, people often ask, like, what do you get? Well, we have over 100 hours of extra bonus content that are not available anywhere online. And we go into deep dives on all kinds of different areas. So if you would like to learn more about that, then pop along to bestsellerexperiment.com/support. Our special guest today is the amazing Karen Story. Now, if you're a long-term listener of the podcast, you'll have heard me talk about Karen on a number of occasions. Karen is originally from the US and moved over to the UK for a 3 to 6 month stint. We're going to talk about this, Karen, in a minute. For 3 to 6 months in the 80s. And Karen is still with us today in the UK, and she hails from Leamington Spa. And today's focus, we're going to be talking to Karen about her incredible success with short stories. And I'm going to be putting in as many alliterations as I can today as well. It's absolutely incredible. Karen came into the Academy a couple of years ago and has entered over, just last year alone, over 40 short story competitions. But the thing that's fascinating about Karen is her incredible success rate. And today we're going to delve into some of her secrets as to how she does it. And it's something we've never focused on. So Karen Story, welcome to the Bestseller Experiment.
Thank you very much, Mark. It's lovely to be here.
It's lovely to have you here as well. And you know what I find fascinating is I can only just hear a hint of that American accent, Karen. Would you say it's still there, or is it got...
Well, I think I'm a foreigner wherever I go, because people can pick up a little bit of something here and then I go to America and they do not think I'm a New Yorker anymore. I've been in this country 40 years now.
Wow, it's amazing. Absolutely amazing. It's funny, actually, when we moved to Canada, my kids were different ages at the time, and my two eldest have got really strong English accents still. And my youngest is completely 100% Canadian accent. And it's funny when we go around as a family and people like hear different accents, they can't quite work that out. But it's so lovely to have you here as well, because you've been in the Academy for a couple of years, and we're going to get to that a bit later on. But one of the things that I've been noticing is for people that don't know, we have a wins forum in the Academy, and we really encourage people to share their big and their small wins. And the thing I kept seeing popping up almost, it felt like almost weekly, was some win about a short story that you'd entered. So let's start just, where did short stories start for you?
It's the weird thing is, Mark, I have always written them. Since I learned to write, I would sit down and write short stories. And last year, I went home to America to visit my mother. I brought my 25-year-old daughter with me. And it was really embarrassing because my mother had this booklet that I had written out, stapled together, drawn pictures. And it was a short story I'd written at 5 years old. And she handed it to my daughter. And it was about my grandmother's dog, who they were getting a new dog to keep this dog company. And my daughter sat there reading this, and she was crying, tears of laughter down her face, saying, "Oh, my God, Mom, I can't believe you read it. You wrote this." And then she sort of put it down. She said, "But do you know what? It's really good." And I'm like, "Oh, come on." Now, it wasn't good because I was 5 years old. But what I noticed when I read it back was, oh, my God, this dog who was the protagonist has a character arc. He changes. He changes his perception of his life with getting this new companion, this new doggy companion. And I thought, how was it at age five? I already understood that a story meant that the main character had to go through some sort of change. And throughout my life, I would find that in order to entertain myself, I would just sit and write a short story. And I didn't do it for anyone else. I didn't do it from the point of view, I'm going to have this published one day. It was just something I enjoyed doing. I enjoyed the focus of immersing myself into a story. And I probably stopped doing that when I got to around my 20s and life got serious and I embarked on a career in London doing estate agency work in Knightsbridge. And stories just left me probably for decades. Up until a few years ago, I started writing again. And the reason I started writing was I had two family members who were unwell, and I was giving them a lot of support, also working a full-time job. By now, I'd gone into sign language interpreting. And I felt like this energy was draining away from me because I was just spending all my time looking after other people. And what gave me the energy back was just to take an hour in the evening and write a story. And that's when the writing started blossoming for me again.
Wow, that's incredible. Isn't it interesting how you turn to writing as a way of, not distraction, but more kind of a escapism or the ability to give yourself some quality time? And I think it's not often talked about, but I think a lot of people do that, whether they've done it intentionally or whether it's something that has always been a part of their life, but they don't realize how much it helps them during those challenging times.
Yes, absolutely. It was like a form of therapy, almost like a meditation.
Yeah. And actually, that's a really good way of putting it. I think that's again, another way that people describe when you get in the flow of writing, it almost feels like you dive into some form of meditation where it's where the outside world just disappears and you become completely, fully immersed into the world that you're creating. It's incredibly powerful, isn't it?
And it is.
It's great that you started to use that. So how did that help you during those challenging times, would you say?
I just felt I'd be feeling stressed. I'd go home, I'd go upstairs, I'd say to my husband, I just need a little bit of time on my own. I didn't tell him I was writing. In fact, I started buying writing magazine and hiding them because I was almost embarrassed that he would sort of say, well, what are you doing? What are you doing this for? Because this is something I used to do as a kid. And I would go upstairs and I started writing a novel, which I'd never attempted before, but I really had to immerse myself and focus on that. And when I spent about an hour and a half writing afterwards, instead of feeling drained as I started out when I'd go into the room to write, I'd feel refreshed. So it sort of put something into the energy well rather than the other way around.
Yeah, that's incredible. I have to laugh as well, the idea of hiding a writing magazine. It's usually the opposite way around in a relationship, you know that.
Is it? Oh, I see what you're saying. We won't go on to that, Mark.
No, you won't. But like, just you imagine like that would be a great short story about a couple who both discover a magazine that the other one's hiding from each other, right?
I haven't discovered his. Maybe I haven't looked.
Okay. There's a writing prompt there somewhere, I'm sure. But I think it's amazing. And I think it's, I can imagine all the people listening to you talking right now saying, yeah, that's exactly, I realize that's why I do this now. A lot of lights might be coming on in that moment. And I find it really, really fascinating as well that you talked about how you started out with short stories. Were you just writing them for pleasure? Writing them for yourself, which is very, very different, isn't it, from writing a full-length novel? I don't think many people sit down to write a full-length novel just for the pleasure of it and for themselves. I mean, most people want other people to read it. And I think that's what stands apart, the idea of a short story. It's not something that you're committing to do for the next year or two. What do you get the most pleasure out of? Because you've written a novel as well. So when you compare the two, What do you like? What would you say are the kind of the positives of short stories over a novel?
The positive of the short story is the fact that I can do the whole thing in either a morning or an afternoon. Now, I'm not saying it's perfect. I need to go back a few days later, polish it up. But it's that satisfaction, because a novel, it takes weeks, it takes months. There's a lot of sort of sitting that pondering, walking around, thinking, okay, what happens next? With a short story, it just comes because it's just this one quick incident that you focus on. And the satisfaction comes from just getting that out in one go.
Yeah. And what would you say to someone who's been saying, who'd maybe just started or is in the middle of a novel and are really stuck, but has never really tried short stories? I mean, did you use short stories interlaced when you were writing the novel, or did you?
You wound me up once, Mark, because I told you I was procrastinating by writing short stories when I should have been writing my novel. And you told me that was allowed, which was great. And it's true. I just find that, again, going back to that satisfaction of getting a story out quickly. But then I find when I've written a short story, I can then go back to the novel and go back into all the work that needs to go into writing a novel.
Mm. Now, one of my favorite quotes, and I'm paraphrasing here, but it was, I can't remember who said it, but it was the idea of somebody writing someone a letter, and they said at the top of the letter, "I'm really sorry I wrote you a long letter. I didn't have time to write you a short one."
Yeah.
And I think a lot of people don't appreciate the skill that goes into writing a short story, because when somebody gives themselves 150,000 words to write a story, they've got all the time in the world to go off and explore and world build and character build. But, I was looking back at episode 108 that we did, and we said, short story writing is hard. Cramming great character and story into a few thousand words is a skill few writers master. So what would you say, in terms of the process? I mean, you talk about writing a short story, it sounds like almost sometimes in one sitting in terms of first draft. But did you find that it was hard to begin with and it improved over time? Or did you find it was quite natural for you to write short stories out the gate?
I think it was natural. I'm not saying that the stories are always good. Are they improving over time? Yes. I think they are improving over time. I think the thing about short stories is I think to myself, well, these don't matter. Because with a novel, going back to other people to read them, when I write a short story, that's just for me. And then I put it away and I look at it and I think, oh, actually, if I sort of tweak this, that, whatever, this is good enough to put into a competition. And I think that's why I can write the short stories so quickly. Because I just don't care. I just write it. And it doesn't matter because I've only spent a couple of hours on it. I've not spent, 6 months as I would writing a novel. It doesn't matter if after 2 hours I want to throw it away. But that doesn't end up happening. There's always something that could be salvaged from it to make it good enough to enter somewhere.
That's a fascinating point, because I've noticed that in a lot of very, very successful, like people, artists at the top of their game. Ed Sheeran's a great example of that. And I actually coached early days with Ed Sheeran's team. I was coaching his team, who were coaching him. And the thing about I've noticed about Ed's career as an example is he pops out a few songs a day. And he really is very unattached to them emotionally. Like, some of them are great, some of them are not great. He sometimes doesn't know which is going to be good or which is going to be bad. It's often his record label that might actually tell him, oh, this is a really good one. He's like, oh, is it? Oh, okay. But it's almost like that detachment of it not being all or nothing. And I think a lot of people, when they sit down to write a novel, it's such a big thing. It's so serious. It's like, it's got to be perfect. And there's so much pressure that we put on ourselves that it's almost like we're straining. We're like that 100-meter sprinter who's straining to try and run that, and everything tenses up, and then we don't get in the flow. So it sounds to me like with your short story writing, that sense of detachment, of knowing that it doesn't have to be any good. If you've done it and you've enjoyed the writing process, then in some ways it's like job done, isn't it? But I wonder if it's through the lack of attachment or needing it to be perfect, which is why you have so many great stories come through, because you're relaxed when you're writing. Do you think that's part of it?
I do think that's part of it. And when I sit down to write my novel, I tell myself, well, this is like a short story, it doesn't matter. But my brain hasn't got that. My brain is still very much a perfectionist when it comes to the novel writing. I think it's because so much more time is invested in a novel. I want to be able to switch my brain to not care so much about writing the novel. But I don't know what my agent would think about that. He'd probably then end up with a big mess, wouldn't thank me for it.
And I think I once said in one of our coaching sessions the idea of maybe we could start to think of each chapter of our book as a short story, because that way you can kind of take away this idea of this huge grey elephant in the room, literally, that you're trying to write, and, you know, chunk it down into each chapter can also have a little story arc as well, obviously, within itself. So that might be a good way for people to kind of get through novels. But let's focus in on the short story successes that you've had, because really one of the things I've noticed is over the last 12 months in particular, the amount of wins that you've been posting, you know, whether it's being longlisted, shortlisted, winning cash prizes, getting into anthologies. So tell us about what has happened. I mean, it's over about 40 competitions that you entered in the last roughly 12 months.
I added it up for you. And out of those 40 competitions, I had 16, I'll call them wins, but those consist of either, as you said, you were just saying, the short listings, long listings, anthology publications, a few cash prizes, a runner-up prize. So I think my hit rate is sort of like 1 in 3. If I enter 3 competitions, I'm thinking, well, at least one of these is going to list me. And what that does for me is, you know, as writers, we put up with a lot of rejection, a lot of doubts. But when I get the email saying, oh, congratulations, you know, you've been chosen, I think, well, my writing must be okay if these judges are looking at hundreds, some contests, thousands of entries, and they're saying mine's one of the best. It's just that confirmation I need that, yeah, keep writing, keep going, because someone actually thinks you're good.
And it's almost like it's a building block of confidence, which with each success you get, it's another external validation of, like you say, what you're doing is being appreciated. And the fact that it's happening so often, you then can no longer deny the fact that your writing is great, because, you know, it's just evidence outside of yourself. Whereas when you write a novel, the reverse is almost true, where you spend a lot of time working on a piece of work with no feedback. And then you've got this, and then you go through this, you know, typically incredibly challenging time where most people get like 30 rejections, and then it's like all or nothing on the one success. And so I love that. I love how you describe that. They kind of almost think about a staircase of confidence that you get as you kind of write short stories. So what would you say to people who maybe haven't focused on short stories as either a form of relief, you know, as a kind of a way of pausing the book that they're writing, or have never, for example, even enter the competition, because I think there's a lot of people who write, like you say, for themselves, but they never have the courage to take that big step. I mean, go back to the first one that you ever entered. Can you think back to what made you actually go for it and have the courage to actually submit that work?
I think the first one I entered, and I actually ended up in an anthology, and I don't know why I chose this one. I think it was in Writing Magazine. It was the Scottish Arts Trust, and they were looking for a 2,000-word story on any theme. And I think they were the ones who said that, you know, we like the more unusual. And I thought, think about my short stories are, they are very unusual because my novels are commercial. I write what my agent calls upmarket commercial. So when I'm sort of working for a long time on my novel and I want a break from it, you know, if you're having a really sort of, you know, you're having a big meal and you've got lots of different courses and the waiter comes and they give you a dish of sorbet to cleanse your palate. Well, I'll be working on my commercial novel and I just need to clear my head a bit. So my short stories, I'll just write something really, really weird and strange with an unexpected twist, because that clears my creative brain then to go back to writing the commercial novel. So when I saw Scottish Arts Trust, they said, you know, they wanted something very unusual. I thought, well, I've got a few of those. And I sent them a story called Spaceship Head. And it was about these two feuding neighbors. And the reason it was called Spaceship Head is that the protagonist referred to the other neighbor as Spaceship Head because she had this weird silver bob hairstyle. And it is just a sort of thing I couldn't make a novel out of because it was just such a strange story. But Scottish Arts Trust, they loved it. They took it. They listed it. They asked if they could put it in their anthology. And that's what started me thinking, oh, wow, people like these short stories. Okay, well, I've got a few more here that I've just sort of written at random and I'll put them in this contest and that contest. And as I say, it's sort of like one out of every three, I'll get a good response.
Mm. Now, in terms of the actual knock-on benefits and these, I mean, you talked about a few there, but what are some of the most unexpected things that have happened by entering a short story competition?
Oh, I've had some great experiences. I mean, one, the South Warwickshire Literary Festival, which I'm actually this year I'm helping to organise, so I can't enter their competitions. But last year I had a short memoir piece that was runner-up. And I was asked if I wanted to read it out, and I did. It was very nerve-wracking. I went up on stage and I read this piece, and I hadn't practiced it. And the mistake I made was, it was quite an emotional piece. It was a story about my brother during 9/11. He was a New York cop who worked at the precinct across in the Twin Towers, and the communication I had with him at the time. And I read this piece, and I'd forgotten how emotional I felt at the time. And I'm standing on the stage and I'm thinking, oh, my God, I'm about to cry because, you know, I forgot how I felt about this back then. And I had to look at the audience that were watching me and I just had to apologize. Then I stopped, I composed myself and I continued reading. And I thought, I walked off the stage, I thought that was such a disaster. But then people came up to me afterwards and said, I was so moved by that, I was so moved. And I thought, okay, it's fine because, you know, I was just being real about it. They accepted it. But so that was an interesting experience. And then I learned from that because I was asked to read again. The London Independent Story Prize also included a work of fiction of mine in their latest anthology. And they asked if I would like to read it at their book launch. And this was a fabulous evening. It was held at East Putney Library, which I believe is a listed building. And it was a wonderful party, wine, and meeting all these fabulous authors. But what I had done beforehand, I'd met a friend of mine in Hampstead and she made lunch for me and she's a former theatre director. And she said, right, have you practiced this? And I said, yeah, and I'm the best and I practice. She said, read it to me. So I stood up and I read the piece to her and she went all theatre director on me. She said, no. She said, you're not going to do it like that. You're going to do it like this. And you put the emotion here. And I was arguing with her saying, no, we're authors. We're not actors. We're not expected to do this. And she said, you are going to do it. So just to humor her, I did it. Anyway, I went to this launch party. I read my piece. And I felt so confident and relaxed, and I hadn't really realized, hadn't really appreciated it was because of the coaching from my friend. And she was right, because people came up to me afterwards and they said, wow, you know, were you the winner? And I wasn't. I was just one of the people who were listed. But I think because I presented it with such confidence. So yes, if you're ever asked to read out, definitely practice beforehand, put the emotion in it.
Yeah, I love that, because people don't think about when they enter a short story that they might end up actually standing in front of an audience reading it.
Yeah.
But what brilliant training, you know, because, I mean, how many, best-selling authors are out there reading a few pages from their new book? It's something that a lot of authors might need to do at some point in their career, and the opportunity to get comfortable with it by practicing and then, you know, going out in front of an audience in the library. I mean, it's very similar to the stories we hear from, you know, when people go and do book tours around the country, it's an amazing thing to think. It's absolutely brilliant. I love it. And you just never would imagine that, would you, when you started out? With the actual writing of short stories themselves, obviously you've done a lot of them, so you've kind of, you know, delved into the process of them. If somebody's interested in getting into short story writing and even entering competitions, what kind of some of the top tips that you would share with them, just from your own experience of the many that you've done?
Okay, number one, follow the rules. If there's a word count, and there's always a word count, if the word count is 2,000 words, do not go one word over that, because you'll be disqualified. And also, all contests have different rules. They might want it in a certain font. They might want it sent to them in a particular way, either through their website. Just follow every single rule, because competitions get so many entries. They don't need more than that as an excuse to say, right, no, this one's rejected. Number two, enter it before the closing day. Don't wait till the last day, because if you have a technological glitch, then you've lost your opportunity. And if it's a minute after the deadline, it's not going to be accepted. I would also say that I think a lot of people don't realize, I remember reading from a short story judge once that she received very beautiful prose and interesting premises, but a lot of stories didn't have an ending to it. It just sort of tailed off, and it was like, oh, well, what's that about? You have to remember it's a story. And like a novel, it's got three acts. It's got a beginning, it's got a middle, it's got an end. And you've got to have those three elements. You know, going back to when I was 5 years old and I wrote a story about the two dogs, there was a beginning, a middle, and an end. And the ending, particularly with a short story, if you can put a shocking twist in there, that gets the judge's attention. And also, start with the action. You don't have time with a short story to give an introduction. Just start in the middle of the action. Bring the reader in straight away. I'd say those are my top tips.
Excellent. And then those are also amazing tips for anyone writing a book as well. I mean, really, when you think about it, right? So we always hear about, like, go straight into the action on the first page of the novel. It's great. It's kind of like a model, isn't it, that you can then expand outwards. Now, with entering competitions, I know there's many, many, many competitions out there. And sometimes it's hard to know which ones are the real deal and which ones are kind of not so legit. How do you make decisions over what you enter?
There are a few places that I trust. I trust Writing Magazine. I look at the back there. They always list what competitions are coming up that month. There's also a chap named Christopher Fielding who has a website, and he's very generous. He lists all the different competitions that he knows are legitimate, and he shares them with people. So I just go through there and I just sort of think, you know, if it's got a theme, oh, have I got a story that might fit into that theme? Or if I tweaked a few things would fit into that theme? Yes, okay, that's fine. Oh, right, that's got a word count around, you know, some of the stories that I have. I'll go for that.
Brilliant. That's really great advice. And I remember as well at some point, I don't know if it was last year or the year before, you were kind of like struggling to keep up with all the different competitions you entered. And then you came up with an idea. What was that?
Oh, you know what it is, Mark, because it's one of your favorite things, a spreadsheet.
Yeah.
And I came up with this idea because I realized I entered the same competition twice for the same story. And I'd actually paid twice. And I wrote to them and apologized. And I said, I'm so sorry. I realized I already entered this one last month. And they were so nice. And I said, keep the money, you know, whatever. They were so nice. They wrote back and they sent me back the money. So wow. I thought, well, that was really good of them. But then I decided then I need to keep a spreadsheet because I'm losing track. So I've got a spreadsheet of the name of the contest, what the word count is they require, what the deadline is, when they're going to announce the long list, when they're going to announce the short list, also what the prizes are, and, of course, the name of the story I entered. And what's also really good about writing when they're going to announce the long list and the short list, I always expected that I would get emailed. And then I found out, I remember I was looking at my spreadsheet one day and I thought, oh, I haven't heard from that contest. And I thought my story was really going to be right for them. And I just happened to go on the website to see who got listed. And my name was there. They just hadn't bothered to email me. So then I realized, oh, actually, it's really good keeping track of when these lists are going to be announced. Because I can go back and check, well, am I on there?
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, it's a great problem to have. And I love the fact that you use spreadsheet. Just music to my ears. But it's also really, it's very interesting. It's like, it shows just how, when you get to that point where you need to keep track, just shows how prolific you are. And one of the other things that I find fascinating as well, and we'll talk a bit about the Academy in a minute, but as part of the coaching that I do on the Academy every month, the life coaching for writers, I always start that session, as you know, with it started off with a one page of wins. And now it's about six pages of wins. And I'm saying to everyone, oh, we're going to get to the coaching in a minute. We're going to get to the coaching in a minute. These are all the wins from everyone this month. But one of the things that I find fascinating is I also put up a slide which shows people who have absolutely crushed it on word count. And, you know, we obviously encourage everyone, just it's all about in the Academy. It's all about, let's do those 200 words a day. Let's just try and hit that kind of minimum target that we're looking for. But one thing I noticed with you, Karen, is in the last, in a number of months, the word count you're putting out a month is absolutely bonkers. I mean, we are talking, folks, everyone listens to this. I mean, don't be deceived here that Karen is writing a couple of thousand word short stories, you know, and that's what you're doing each month. I mean, I've seen numbers like 40,000 words a month is quite typical, 35,000 words a month. Like, how are you doing that?
I think once I sit down and start writing, when we were talking about going into the flow, you know, earlier in the interview and, you know, being totally focused, I completely lose track of time. If I'm working my novel and everything's sort of going the way I want it to go, I don't want to stop. I don't want to lose momentum. And I could sit down maybe 8 o'clock in the morning and I could start writing and I'm writing and I'm writing and I might stop for a quick loo break or a tea break. And then I'll get to about 4 o'clock in the afternoon and I'll think, oh my God, I haven't even eaten anything today. And my husband's sort of coming down and he's looking through some sliding door here and he's walking away and he's thinking, oh God, you know, what's she up to now? But I just think it's getting into that flow. And that's how I just get these bursts of thousands of words coming in.
Wow, that's absolutely brilliant. I mean, it sounds like the complete opposite of the story you hear from a lot of people, which is, you know, oh, writer's block, or that idea of writer's block. And the fact that you're able to do that so consistently, I do wonder if a lot of that has been how you've trained yourself with short story writing, you know, the fact that you're finishing things as well and you're not having to kind of get in the stuckness of writing, which is where I think a lot of people get lost and almost train themselves on getting stuck. So that maybe there's a link.
I think there is an impatience in me, Mark. When I want to get a story out, I just want to get it out onto paper, you know, good or bad. I just want to get it out there. So if I'm really sort of going with my novel and these ideas are coming and they're coming and they're coming, it's like I don't want to turn off the tap. I just want to write until I can't write anymore.
That's amazing. Now, I remember towards the beginning of this year, we had Amy Newmark on from Chicken Soup for the Soul. And I put out a challenge to our listeners to say, hey, why don't you try and submit a story to Chicken Soup for the Soul? And you mentioned just before we came on air today that you've done that, but not only done that, but you've chosen a story, which is something you wrote, you kind of told me about a while back, which was incredibly moving. I mean, share a little bit of that background.
My father sadly passed away a little over a year ago. And it was around Christmas time. And my parents had this thing where they were in their 80s. And my mother said, oh, we don't celebrate Christmas anymore. You know, because I asked, have you got a tree? This, that. No, we don't do anything like that anymore. And then a few days before Christmas, she phoned me up and she said, well, you'll be happy to know. We've decorated the apartment because they were living in a retirement apartment by now. And we've put out the little ceramic Christmas tree that I made when I was a kid. She said, because your father told me, she said, now, he's got Alzheimer's, so don't take any of this seriously. She said, but he told me that this is going to be his last Christmas, so we have to celebrate it one last time. He said he's not going to live till the end of the month. Now, apart from the Alzheimer's, my father was very healthy, absolutely nothing wrong with him. And then she told me yesterday, she said, I'll tell you how bad his hallucinations are getting. Yesterday, he thought his brother Larry was in the bedroom talking to him. My uncle Larry had died about 10 years ago. And she said he was so happy about the talk they had. And then it was afterwards when he was saying that he wasn't going to be around. Well, my father died that night. He went out for a walk in the middle of the night. He left the apartment. My mother didn't know. She was sound asleep. And the next thing she knew, she had police knocking on the door and said that they found him. What had happened in the end is he had a stroke. Now, nobody knew that there was anything wrong. And what really touched me is my father knew. My father knew he was going, and they did. He just wanted to see the Christmas lights one last time, and he got that.
Wow. That's just such an incredibly powerful story, isn't it? It makes you stop and think, doesn't it, about what's going on in life and the bigger things that we don't fully understand. And your dad was very encouraging of your writing, wasn't he?
He was. My father was also a writer, but he was a writer who didn't show his work to anybody, but to me, he showed some of it to my mother. There is a reason for that, which I can talk about now that he's gone. My father was an infamous New York cop back in the 1970s. I don't know if you heard of Frank Serpico. He was the policeman who turned in the corrupt police officers who were taking money from the mafia. My father was one of the bad guys, and he ended up working for the district attorney in sort of helping them arrest the other guys who were, I mean, there's a whole story behind this, Mark. We lived with bodyguards in the house. My mother is only just started talking about all this because my father was getting death threats for the fact that he was now having to turn in other New York cops who were on the take. And my father used to write about his time on the force, all these things that happened. And we used to say, why don't you send this in to be published? And the look on his face, the big fear was, if I send anything out to be published, even though it has nothing to do with the mafia and the Frank Serpico thing, that's all it will ever come back to in publicity. So he locked all his writing away. And when he heard I started writing, he was so proud, and he told me, he said, don't do what I did. He said, get it out there. Get your work out there.
Wow. And those words no doubt live with you probably every day now as you sit down to write in honour of his life in some ways. And isn't that brilliant? Absolutely love that story. Thank you so much for sharing that, Karen. It's such a emotionally and heartfelt story as well. But this is what writing's about, isn't it? When we talk about story and emotion, and no doubt all the things that you've experienced in your life, a lot of that is no doubt coming through your words, which is probably why you're having so much success, because you're connecting emotionally with the reader, which is incredible. Now, you've been in the Academy for a couple of years now. We've had such a blast. We've so enjoyed your presence. You're such a leading light there. But I'm kind of curious as to what your challenges, your big writing challenges were before you joined the Academy.
Do you know, I think my biggest one was that I'm aware that to be an author now, you've got to also have some marketing skills. And I felt total apathy towards any form of marketing. I mean, the thought of having a website, doing newsletters, no, this is the corporate world. This is not what writing's about. I don't want to do it. And you, and also Mark Stay at the time, sort of showed me, well, wait a minute, this can be creative. This can be fun as well. And I'm very proud to say that now I have a website, which I absolutely love because it's fun, because I do all these sort of crazy research things for my novel, like my current novel. My protagonist spends time on a sheep farm. So what did I do? I went and I spent time on a sheep farm, and I could put the photographs up on my website. I can put my short stories sort of listings and wins on the website, all these sorts of fun things. And I thought, I really like having a website. And then the thing that really I was fighting against was a newsletter. I don't want to write a newsletter. Why should, you know, this is just not me at all. I want to write fiction. But I found a way to write my newsletters, which are newsletters, but using a fictional character, although she's not really fictional. It's my cat, Tiffany, who writes the newsletters. And I sort of just, you know, embody her, take on her personality, because she's a very, very grumpy, snarky cat. And she just writes about what I'm doing from her point of view. And people tell me they love this newsletter. I remember when the first newsletter went out and I only had like about 20 or so subscribers. And I was in Ireland with a writing friend, and she just happened to open her Facebook page. We were sitting in a restaurant having lunch. And she said, Karen, people are talking about your newsletter on Facebook. And I said, what? And people were saying, oh, my God, this newsletter is so funny. Have you seen Karen Story's newsletter? And then I went on to my website and looked, and my subscribers had more than doubled in a few hours since it was out.
Wow.
And I thought, wow, this works. Okay. So, yeah, so once a month, my cat Tiffany, while my back is turned, types up a newsletter about all the things that, you know, what she thinks of things, what she's unhappy about, what she sort of approves of. And
I love it.
It seems to be a hit. She gets fan mail, more than I do.
That's so brilliant. And tell everyone the name of the newsletter, because it's genius.
Oh, it's Breakfast with Tiffany, because it goes out on a Sunday morning. And my cat's name really is Tiffany. And I would show her to you, because she usually crashes my Zoom calls. But I've actually locked her in another room, because she'd just be walking all in front of the camera right now.
Well, absolutely. But yeah, but if people want to see her, I'm no doubt she probably has a few pictures in the newsletter, so people can subscribe to the newsletter.
My website and you go on the page for the newsletter, it's there. There's a picture of her sitting at my desk, beautiful grey Persian, and it says Breakfast with Tiffany.
Brilliant. So how do they get to your website, Karen?
It's www.karenstoryauthor.com.
Brilliant. And story is EY, isn't it?
Just for EY, yes, that's right. I tell people story was a wedding gift from my husband, having that surname.
I was going to say, you married the perfect man to become an author. I think I made that joke quite a few months ago when I was talking about one of your successes, and it just hit me one day. It's funny, because when you get to know someone and, you know, their name is their name, and then one day it just hit me, hang on a minute, we've got the short story queen here and her name is Story. I mean, just doesn't get more perfect than that. There's a few, I actually did a speech about how people's surnames often represent the career that they do. There was a Chinese lawyer in Vancouver called Su Yu, and there was a...
I got it already, yes.
Right. But there is something about the world that we show up in and we write. It's created around the bigger world that we live in. And I really want to honour you in this moment, just because of, you know, how you've shown up in this world and the things that you've experienced, the things you're doing, the prolific writing that you do. You may well know this, that we have a kind of a special award that we give people in the Academy that we think have kind of gone beyond, above and beyond, you know, what we would call like outstanding success. So we want to award you, Karen, with the Academy All-Stars Award today, just to acknowledge what you've achieved. Because also, as we've always said in the Academy, you know, it's not just about showing up and writing. It's also about what people do to inspire other people, to show them what's possible. And I know that, you know, a lot of people who are sitting there today thinking, you know, maybe I should do a short story. I haven't thought about doing a short story. I'm sure there's a lot of people who are very excited and enthused after hearing your story. My only concern is that you might have a lot more competition now.
Fine. Hey,
bring it on.
No, right? that would make me really happy to inspire other people to do it.
Yeah.
Writers are never other competition. We're all in it together.
Absolutely. There's enough room for everyone, isn't there?
Yes.
So how would you say that the Academy has helped you as a writer specifically?
I think a lot of it is to do with confidence, because everyone is so supportive. You know, talking about, you know, how other writers aren't competition. Everyone there, all the fellow academies, we just all sort of support, encourage, inspire each other. And that has been a big thing for me during the time on the Academy.
Yeah, that's huge, isn't it? Because really confidence is everything. And in fact, when people lack it, the kind of the reverse happens as well. People give up, or they don't believe in their own abilities. They don't build up that momentum. And what's your favorite part of the Academy, Karen?
Okay, I'm not saying this because it's you interviewing me, Mark, but it is the life coaching sessions you do over Zoom. I just come away after that hour. I just think whatever the life coaching is about, I just sit there and think, yes, I can do this. I mean, I remember the one where you were telling us all, go out and get author quotes for your books. Go out and get them now. It doesn't matter if you haven't got a publishing contract yet. Just go out and get it. And I thought, okay, I'll do it. And within a week, I had 6 author quotes, which I've now put on my website, you know, from some amazing people. I've got Sophie Hanna, I've got Anstey Harris, I've got Cass Green. And it's because you gave me and the others the confidence to say, just go out and do it. Just ask. And it wouldn't have occurred to me to do that. So yeah, you just make us feel that anything's possible.
Oh, that's super kind of you to say. I wasn't expecting that. I didn't ask that.
I know you weren't.
But do you know what? Do you know what I love? What gives me the greatest joy coaching on the Academy is seeing people's eyes light up when they think, oh, maybe I could do this. And then when people like you go out there, Karen, and there's yourself and many other examples in the Academy of people that have just taken that step of courage and done it. And then the things that those quotes are going to give you, the confidence. And also when people come to your website and they see those quotes, it's like, it's what people do on the front of books and movies. It just works. But well done for actually going and doing that, because it's one thing me saying it, but it's another thing actually following through with it. So that's really heartwarming to hear. I didn't realize you had so many quotes. It's absolutely brilliant. Absolutely fantastic. Now, to finish off, Karen, tell us a bit about where you're at right now, because you have written a novel. You've got an agent.
So. I've written a novel. And one of the reasons my word count has been so high recently is because I've been doing some revisions with my agent. So I've been rewriting chapters, adding scenes. We're both feeling really confident about this. He loves it. In fact, we met yesterday at London Book Fair briefly, and he just sat me down. He said, I am crazy about this novel and I can't wait to get it out there. And I thought, oh, that's just so good to have an agent that believes so much in it.
Oh, complete. And that's everything, isn't it? It's having an agent who is so excited, because they'll take that excitement out into the publishing world and it will be infectious. So we are so looking forward to seeing what happens with the novel, Karen. I just want to wish you every I won't say luck, because, you know, the harder you work, the luckier you get. We know that. You've put in the hours and you've worked really, really hard to get the success that you have. So thank you for coming on the show today. Thank you for inspiring everyone, both out in the podcast world today and in the Academy. And I would like to just put it out there into the universe, as I always do, but maybe one day we can have you back on the show to hear part 2 of this story.
Oh, I'll look forward to that.
Brilliant stuff. Brilliant. Well, do stay with me, Karen, whilst I just say a big thank you to everyone who's listened today. And like Karen said, if you'd like to go and find out more about Karen, subscribe to her amazing newsletter. You know you want to see pictures of cats, right? I mean, go do it. KarenStoryAuthor.com. And if you'd like to follow today's video on YouTube, because we do record these now as well, you can see Karen and myself. You come to @bestseller experiment on YouTube. Or if you're lazy like me, just type bestseller experiment We are the CEO. There's only one bestseller experiment out there, folks. That's one of the beauties of having such a bonkers name for a podcast. So just pop that in your search engine. And we're also on socials at Facebook, Bestseller Experiment, and on Twitter or X, Instagram, Threads, Pinterest, Bestseller XP. Karen, so your Twitter handle?
On Twitter or X, whatever you want to call it, it's at StoryTellerK and Story with the E in it.
Perfect stuff. Well, thank you again so much for joining us today, Karen. And like I say, so looking forward to having you come back again in the future. And if you'd like to check out today's show notes, please do check out the links at bestsellerexperiment.com. And whilst you're there, we also have a newsletter. I will say there are no pictures of cats. Maybe I'm missing something there, Karen. Maybe we need to do dogs or something cute like that. Pictures of me and Mark stay, sometimes don't really kind of do it for everyone. But you can come to the website and click on contact. And then you can send us also a message there. And if you want to sign up for the newsletter, there's a newsletter link. And I always say this, but if you're interested in trying a short story, why don't you try a short story that is 1,000 words and you can do it in 5 days by challenging yourself to the 200 word challenge. Every day, just try and knock out these 200 words, like 1/5 of a story. By the end of the week, you may be able to enter a competition. So 200wordchallenge.com. Join thousands of other people who are building their daily writing habit with us. So have a fantastic writing week. Have a great, massively productive writing week, no doubt, Karen. Look forward to seeing you back in the Academy very, very soon. And until next week, it's goodbye from me, Mark DeVoe, aka Bookmark. Goodbye. What are your writing dreams? Finishing that book? Quitting the day job? Becoming a best-selling author? Since 2016, we've interviewed and studied the advice of over 500 best-selling authors who've collectively sold over 1 billion books. And in the Bestseller Academy, we've incorporated powerful and proven strategies for success, inspiring fiction and non-fiction authors just like you to reach new heights and write their best book ever. Ready to take your writing to the next level with accountability, craft, coaching, and the most inspiring and exclusive community of like-minded writers? Well, your bestseller dreams are just a click away. Join us today at bestsellerexperiment.com/academy. That's bestsellerexperiment.com/academy.